everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. I'm Nick, and today I'm also here with my co-host Rohan, and we're going to be talking about a very interesting point in world history, specifically during World War II. And it's not really a lot, something you would really think of off the top of your head, but what we're going to talk about today is the Great Purge. And for some context or some background information, I'm going to pull it over to Rohan.
Hey, Nick. Yeah, so today we're talking about the Great Purge, probably one of the largest mass murders or massacres or whatever you want to call it. But essentially, millions upon millions of people died, from innocent Soviet civilians to experienced NKVD officers and INL officers. So not only was it a huge loss of life, it was a massive blow to Soviet intelligence and military operations, because Stalin purged his most experienced members of the intelligence community and his military, the top officers, everything. So, for example, the 1930s and late 20s before, there was a period called the Great Illegals, where there was a law. Soviet intelligence in the West was incredible. The Soviets essentially knew everything that was going on in British politics, for example, because Stalin had this conspiracy theory that he felt the British were going to go attack them, which was obviously not true. The British didn't really have any plans or the capability to, but essentially there was this huge golden age for Soviet intelligence. And here then comes the Great Purge, and now you have neighbors accusing each other of treason, or your secretary accusing you, an NKVD agent, of treason. So you get recalled back to Moscow, tried with complete fabricated evidence, and shot like that. So it's just a terrible time for the people. And honestly, in general, for the long run Soviet history, because they killed a good amount of their experienced leaders and intelligence officers, which would actually hurt them. Because now going on to the 30s after the Great Purge, you have Soviet intelligence start sending people back to Britain and Paris, and they have no clue what they're doing because they don't have experience. They're essentially, you have these training camps where so many people are just kind of trained all at once, kind of an assembly line for agents with no practical experience, and just sent to the front lines. So now, though, what we're going to talk about is, what if the Great Purge didn't happen? What if Stalin didn't institute this essentially mass murder of Soviet civilians and experienced officers of his?
Well, first off, I think we also need to know that, to begin with, Stalin was very paranoid just to begin with. He was very, very paranoid. And we could see this several times throughout World War II, where there was definitely still purges of officers, in a sense, because he still feared at the time period, even after the Great Purge, that maybe Trotskyists were in the government at the time. And that Trotsky, as you know in actual history, is his main rival that he deported to Mexico in, I believe, the 30s. If not, it's the late 20s. Otherwise, outside of that, I think we first have to take a look at the fact that we have to talk about Finland almost immediately, the Great Winter War, in a sense. As it was actually a truce or a standstill at the time period, even though I'd argue Finland won almost in a sense, but Russia just had sheer numbers over it. But I think in this time, it was much with better army officers in the sense. I feel like I think it's more likely that they would probably take over all of Finland in the same vein as they did the Baltic states. What would say you?
Yeah, I think the Soviet Union would have more successful campaigns in Finland and the Baltic states. And I think they would be able to even kind of crush the opposition that was there and crush any of it. And I think one big thing would be Soviet intelligence, as I mentioned a lot. But at the same time, the issue is that, as you said, Stalin was paranoid. He was very set on his conspiracy theory. So he could, for example, he could receive intelligence that Germany was, you know, building up troops on the Russian border in order to invade, and he'll play it as British lies, essentially. So I do definitely think that the Soviet Union is going to have a more successful campaign in Finland and the Balkans and the Baltics. I'm interested to see your opinion of what would happen next, you know, with the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact and the invasion of the Soviet Union and the Great Patriotic War.
Well, I'd say with the British lies, that only came to be at least because of the fact that Britain was at war with Germany. And while he definitely did have that paranoia surrounding the Western powers, in a sense, he also did not have the best trust of Germany, because he saw was going after Lenin and other communists, in a sense. And along with that, I do also believe in the fact that I think regardless that he probably would have not noticed, but more so just didn't really care about what his advisors would say about a German buildup, in a sense. But I think it's just before I go on, I think it's just important that the British Lies thing was more so during the Second World War rather than before the World War. Even though it was probably definitely prevalent in a sense, it was not as prevalent as, say, World War II. And this was further seen, for example, with Rudolf Hess before the invasion of the Soviet Union, because they just believed that was just a British stunt to get them into the war. And so I think with the Great Patriotic War, at least, I think with more talented officers, I definitely do still see a Soviet pushback, because regardless, I feel as if they were definitely underprepared. And if you're not aware of an attack coming in the sense, and I mean, for example, you're not prepared for an attack, whether you know it or not, you're still going to get your butt whooped for a bit. And I think that, in a sense, we definitely would see it at first. But at the same time, though, I think in the long run, it definitely would lead to a quicker end of the war. And that's why when we were talking about it before, like what topic we should do next, I like when you were talking about the Great Purge, in a sense, because I feel with the Great Purge, that also leads – that without the Great Purge ever happening, it leads to better officers in general, or just officers with more willing to try things out and try things out in terms of they're smarter in a sense. They know what to do. And so I definitely like that idea, mainly because I feel as if Germany would probably be defeated a few months, if not a year earlier in this timeline. And that that presents a lot of geopolitical conflicts in the future.
Yeah, exactly. Going off your point, like as I said, Stalin's not going to believe the German buildup. And he's not going to have enough troops on the border to defend, especially when the Germans employed Blitzkrieg in Russia, which they did in our timeline. They're going to get quick and they're going to go far. But I think what's going to be different in this scenario is that there's going to have experienced officers. Like you mentioned, they're going to try new things, try new strategies in order to stop the German advance. And I think they're going to be able to stop it way before Moscow. I think they'll definitely get into the Russian heartland, but I think they'll be a decent ways away from Moscow at least. So even though the German advance would be quick, it'd be devastating and deadly, and they'd get far, they won't get as far as they did in our timeline. And the Siberian troops moving west when Stalin learns that the Japanese are not going to attack the Soviet Union, I think that they will be able to push Germany back quicker. And battles like, for example, the Battle of Stalingrad will never actually happen because they won't be able to get that close to Stalingrad at all. And I definitely agree that the war would end quicker. And I want to ask you this now. Do you think the Western powers, and especially Roosevelt, would be as lenient to give away stuff to Stalin? Because he didn't really bore the brunt of the war like they did in our time, and with the multi-year standoff, essentially.
I think to begin with, before I start to get on to answer your question, I also want to note that while you touched on it a little bit in your thing, I just want to say with the result of the office of the war ending quicker, to be probably less dead bodies on the Soviet side, for sure. But to answer your question, I feel as if, in a sense, I think they definitely would have to be lenient at this point, because it doesn't matter if they're lenient, because Stalin has more of an advantage in this scenario, regardless of whether or not – if it doesn't matter regardless or not if they're more lenient. And I think, for example, let's just say the war ends in 1944, at least in Europe. This also opens up to a more of a – to an Eastern Asian theater as well, which I think we should get into later on. But regarding Europe specifically, I don't think that they could be more lenient in the sense. While FDR was in a sense a little bit of a sympathizer, as seen by the American people, to the Soviet Union, to Stalin at least, and that's what certain people viewed, and that's why some people think that Truman was definitely better than Roosevelt in foreign policy, at the sense that he was tougher on communism than instead of kind of sympathetic to it, but. I think at least with the war ending, I feel like Roosevelt would probably be perfectly fine with it. But more so, I feel like he would be definitely more lenient in the sense than Winston Churchill. And I think that's for sure. That's almost for sure, I feel.
All right. So do you think, if anything, it'll go the other way now? Because now the Soviet Union has a much stronger tie on Germany. Because if it's 44, D-Day would just have happened and Americans gone to France. They haven't really gone to Germany yet, so... they don't have the same advantages they did in our time. So if anything, do you think that Roosevelt would be willing to give up more in order to kind of keep a peace with the Soviet Union? And how would Churchill view that as well?
I think in a sense, I want to answer your second question first. I feel like if he is to give up more, Churchill would view that as almost kind of like traitorous in a sense, I feel. Because even then, he was not a big fan of FDR, and this is not only through his initial meetings with FDR. He knew that FDR was a little bit too lenient with Stalin specifically, and I feel like this would only confirm his fears. And I believe that we definitely would see a different approach to British foreign policy, especially in the 50s, And I think we should also get into that a little bit later on, besides the East Asian theater. And back to your first question, I feel as if Roosevelt wouldn't be more willing in a sense. It'd be more so I'd kind of have to give it up, because if the Soviet Union reaches the Rhine, then at that point it makes no sense not to just give them the whole of Germany. And this is minus, for say, if you want to say Alsace-Lorraine was also German. But no, I think that also presents an issue specifically with the Benelux as well. Austria in this scenario would definitely be under full communist control. And I feel as if the Iron Curtain itself would be more extended. But the second question I definitely like in a sense, because that promotes a very interesting question, especially with future British foreign policy, because it'd definitely be more Britain is by itself. It's an island alone against the world, compared to the original time with a British-American friendship in a sense. So I feel as if that second question definitely brings up a good jumping off point to say.
Yeah, so I think based off what you're saying, kind of British-American relationships would kind of diverge, and Britain would adopt a more pro-British policy over pro-West policy, if you get what I mean. They would just think of themselves and not really the rest of the Western world, like France and the United States and Canada. Now, before Nick answers that question, we're going to have a quick ad break.
See, I would disagree with that notion specifically because I'm going to look at it, for example, when we did one of our earlier episodes, actually, which immediately came to mind would definitely be like the Suez Crisis in a sense, where with the Suez Crisis, for example, it was France, Britain, and Israel against the United States and the Soviet Union, or the U.S. and the USSR were like, no, you can't do this. And I think in that scenario, if the U.S. and USSR tried to intervene against them, I feel as if they couldn't do. I feel as if that Britain wouldn't have listened to them in a sense, like they did in the original timeline. And that also brings up a good question about decolonization as well, because I feel as if with the Suez, well, with the British Empire was definitely in decline during the time period, but if they kept the Suez Canal, I felt as if they would definitely might be able to keep the empire for a bit longer. But to disagree with you, I would have to disagree with you at least with the sense that Britain and that Britain would be just alone. I feel as if I know I said Britain would be Britain first, but no, I feel like it would be more of a stronger Britain-France alliance and more of like a French point of view of the world in a sense compared to the British point of view now. And that's where I lead. But otherwise, let's talk about East Asia, because I think that was another one we said for sure that we should definitely talk about. And I feel like with East Asia, we should definitely look at Manchuria, for example. I think in this timeline, we would see, for example, I think that the CCP would hopefully win a year or two, or a year earlier in a sense where I get where the Nationalist Army was definitely more organized in a sense in the heartland of the CCP's focus, the CCP's heartland, the CCP
Manchuria at that time period.
I feel as if the USSR was to help the CCP, they would definitely get it a year earlier. And outside of that, there's also the case of North Korea becoming just Korea in the sense where while America was definitely approaching in 1944, proposes a really good question about Japan, because I don't know where exactly I would want to take that, because it causes a lot of problems if, for example, if we give Japan totally to a communist puppet state or even just half and half, because then I think the American public would be absolutely outraged.
I think honestly this like world would be horrible for the West, especially, and for the Soviet Union, it would give them so much more power now, because as you mentioned, a half and half scenario for Japan and most of Central Europe is a lot more land than they had in our timeline, where they were essentially limited to their Russian borders on Asia, and Europe they were limited to East Germany. They didn't even get the full Germany, and they didn't get Austria too in our timeline as well. So I think the Soviet influence would be much larger, and a Cold War would be much more bitter, if you get what I mean. The Americans would be much more desperate to stop this domino theory. So, for example, with Korea, I think the Americans would be more determined. And that also brings up a good point, because now I think Russia might consider sending forces there as well, because not only do they have, you know, their Pacific coast right there, but they also have Japan, a major puppet state, or at least they might send Japanese troops there as well. So the Americans and the UN forces would get severely outnumbered by Chinese forces, North Korean forces, and Japanese forces. How do you think the Americans would respond to the domino theory and, for example, Korea?
I don't believe Korea would be affected by a domino theory, because mainly because it's a domino that's already fallen in this sense. And I think the first test we'll really see is a much more amped up Vietnam War in the sense that'll be like our Korea in the first, like our first taste of combat against communism. And that provides, I think that provides a lot more interesting content than say Korea, because Korea, in my opinion, would already be a lost cause, especially in this scenario, if Russia is able to take it out, let's just say by early 1945, along with Japan. And so, yeah, I don't agree with the notion that Korea would be the first fighting ground or the first battleground in the sense, because there would be no South Korea in order for the UN to say, yeah, we need to protect them.
Yeah, that is true. You are right about that, because while they're sweeping up Japan and Manchuria, they might as well just swoop Korea, a Japanese puppet. But I think Vietnam would be an interesting one. I think the Americans would be more determined to win that one, because in their point of view, the world is already falling. The red curtains are falling everywhere. So it's kind of their duty, their patriotic duty to save the existing capitalist nations from communism and protect those that are in the civil wars against communism.
I'm going to say that's Wilsonian democracy for you.
Yeah, you're right, man. 100% Wilsonian democracy right there. But anyway, that's going to be it for today. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. If you did enjoy it, or if you had any suggestions or comments or feedbacks, you can write us a review at ratethispodcast.com/althistory, or you can send us an email. It's in the description, or you can send it to contact@kluka.org, or reach us out on our socials, Twitter and Instagram, Back to the Past P1. And make sure when you get the chance to check out Kluka, and it's a platform dedicated to helping podcasters kind of help grow and essentially start their podcast with different ideas they have. And there's also blog posts too for people that want to start writing or want to just kind of get their name out on the internet. But other than that, thank you again for listening. Nick and I say goodbye to you and have a good rest of your day.